It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Monday? We do. From the Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Studios in San Diego, we welcome you to our Monday bonus podcast. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton with the bruised eye, along with my co-host broadcasting from left field, John Riley. We welcome you to a really special Monday bonus podcast. Our podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores in San Diego to serve you. If you've got projects for 2024, think about them as a consultant. Think about them for ideas. Think about them for materials. And by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. You're going to need help with your eyes somewhere down road, whether it's just vision exams, new glasses, contact lenses, or if something more significant happens, thinks North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. And by Our Lads Draft Guide. If you're a football fan, this is NFL Draft Week. We want you to think about ordering Our Lads Draft Guide. More than 150 pages of information about the draft, the teams, depth charts. Just go to the website, OurLadsDraftGuide.com. John Riley, what a cool show we have. We're trying something really different today. Yes, I'm doing the show with a black eye. We're trying something different. We will have a guest, a co-host later. John Cooper, draft editor of Our Lads Draft Guide, is going to join us later in this hour, and we're going to break down the NFL draft from a lot of different angles. We're looking forward to that. But we got a ton of topics on the table. Before we hit the floor running, introduce to everybody Fans Forum.
Okay, yeah, Fans Forum. That's your chance to get involved. If you got a question for Lee about the draft, about Padres, Chargers, Dodgers, Angels, you know, the NHL playoffs, just type in your comment or question in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or X, and we'll get you involved in Fans Forum.
And if you like sports, I want you to check my website. I write on it every day. There is inside information you won't find anywhere else. Go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com and take a look at the best 15 minutes in sports, Hacksaw's Headlines, my one man's opinion column, and take part in Hacksaw's mini polls. Also, we want you to subscribe and then share with everybody what we're doing. By subscribing, you'll get all the alerts every time we put things up on the YouTube channel, and that's almost every day of the week. And of course, you'll also get all the emails. And by the way, when you go to my website, there's a big orange box on the upper right hand side. That's to join Hacksaw's Insiders Group. You get special emails, all the different things that we are doing. Full disclosure, this looks bad. I had eye surgery. I did not punch a Raider fan. But if I had, he'd still be in the hospital watching the podcast today. John, we got lots to cover. Go ahead. Pick a topic. Let's get this thing underway, our Monday bonus podcast.
Pick a topic. Pick up the phone. And let's talk Chargers and the draft. Lee, are they going to trade down from number 5?
Here's the burning question as it relates to the Chargers as we go towards NFL draft. It begins on Thursday. Do they stay at 5 and get a gem? Do they trade down and get a load of draft picks from somebody that wants to jump up? Do they take a wide receiver and fill one of the biggest vacancies on the roster? There's all kinds of rumors involving the Bolts. One is they're going to stay there and either take a tackle or take one of the wide receivers. The second one, based on what happens above them, the Giants at 6 have made an offer to the Chargers to go to 5 if the right quarterback the Giants want is available. There's also a new rumor. They would trade from 5 back to 10 with the New York Jets. They would allow the Jets to take the wide receiver that Aaron Rodgers wants. The Bolts at 10 could take Brock Bowers, could take an offensive tackle, could probably still find a quality wide receiver and pick up additional draft choices there. And there's also one that they might go as far back as 11, give Minnesota what they wanted at 5. They could also do a deeper drop, although I don't know that I want them to trade with the enemy within the division, Denver or the Raiders. There's lots of things, lots of moving parts. These deals won't come to place until the actual first round has begun and we've seen what happens with the first couple of picks in front of the Chargers. Chargers, if they draft an offensive tackle, are probably going to sign Marquise Scantling, the former Kansas City Chief Green Bay Packer wide receiver. They also met on the weekend with DJ Chark of the Carolina Panthers. They could sign him as a free agent. Scantling is obviously a big-time player. Chark averaged 15 yards per catch last season in Carolina. So if they go offensive tackle or they don't take a wide receiver, they're going to sign one of those guys. And if they draft a wide receiver, you can still find a development offensive tackle maybe in the second round. Joe Ortiz is going to draft 5, 37, 69, and 104. Hmm. Those are they're going to get four of the top 104 picks in the draft if they just stay where they are. So, John, I've thrown a lot of things on the wall. What do you think they should do?
Well, I think Ortiz has this history of always trading back, right, and picking up extra draft picks. To me, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially, you know, if they're looking at these other wide receiver free agents, those guys can fill some holes. And what if you – I mean, if they're going to really commit to this running game, why not just get not just one right tackle? Why not get multiple offensive linemen? And then you could really turn on this whole Harbaugh machine.
Well, it's fascinating, and – we've also joked about the fact that April is Liars Club. Everybody's spreading misinformation. You think the presidential election's got problems? Same thing going on in the NFL. But the Bolts are in just a great situation to get a gem of a player, either tackle or wide receiver. But as you say, Ortiz has a history of when he was with the Baltimore Ravens of flipping picks going back. So if they drop from 5 to 10, maybe they pick up a second-round pick. If they were to go a little bit farther back, maybe they get a second- and a third-round pick. So it'll be fascinating to see.
I have a question, though. You commented maybe the Chargers don't want to trade within the division. And I get the rivalry and everything else.
I've never heard of anybody trading within the bleeping division.
Well, they do it in Major League Baseball. They've done it in the NBA. I mean, why not do it in the NFL? If you had a really good trade that you felt really good about, that you were kind of screwing over one of your divisional rivals, why not make the deal?
The thing is, you're strengthening that rival. If you allowed Denver to jump into 5 and get the quarterback they want, you're making them really good.
Okay.
If you're going to trade with the bleeping Raiders after the Raiders put 62 points up on the board and then taunted you coming off the field last fall?
Well, it depends what you get back. I mean, if you got back some quality, lots of value, why not make the deal?
But the flip side is the amount of value that Denver or the Raiders have to send to the Chargers. I mean, they're strip mining their draft ability, too.
There you go.
So, okay.
Okay.
Well, I just don't see the Padres-Dodgers making any trades. Do you see the Dodgers-Giants making? No.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson.
That's 7,000 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so that's where we are as it relates to the Bolts, but we are not done because there's lots more to talk about. Next question.
Next question. We're talking quarterbacks. Let's stack rank these guys. What do you think, Lee?
Okay, Caleb Williams is going to be a Chicago Bear. He is dynamic. He can run the RPO package that Chicago likes to run. He's fast. He's elusive. He's strong-armed. He's on the move. He's got great leadership capabilities. So Caleb Williams goes number one to Chicago. I'm not sure what's fact or fiction, the Jaden Daniels LSU story. They are dropping hints. He does not want to go to the Washington Commanders at number two. He hasn't issued the thing, I won't play for you, like the Eli Manning issue that became the Phillip Rivers trade. He's not gone that far, but everybody around him in a circle is dropping hints. He doesn't want to play for them. He wants to play for Antonio Pierce with the Raiders because they were together at Arizona State. But that's a hell of a price for the Raiders to try to go from 13 all the way to the number two spot. I just don't know that that is doable. I will say this, Daniels is a more complete quarterback right now under Brian Kelly than he was in his days at Arizona State. He's athletic. He can move. He likes to throw on the run. Jaden Daniels has really proven to be a pretty good player. And the fact that he accomplished some phenomenal statistical seasons in the Southeastern Conference where they play big boy defense, that's really impressive. And he's risen the board. He just doesn't want to play in Washington. Now, he might wind up playing in New England at number three, which desperately needs a quarterback. Third quarterback is Drake May, North Carolina. His stock has dropped some. I don't think it's got so much to do with the meetings that he's had, but he didn't play as well this past season, his junior year, as he played when he lit up the Atlantic Coast Conference as a sophomore. I think there's some concern that he's got mechanical flaws, but that never bothered Phillip Rivers, arm angle and all that. And he's big and he's a stud. I've had one scout tell me this guy is the next Ben Roethlisberger and he can run some. Other people say, boy, there's a bunch of glitches. You're going to have to tear down a bunch of his mechanics to make him a more complete player. So Drake May's stock right now is not what it was at the end of the season. J.J. McCarthy, live arm, smart guy, fierce competitor, played on a great team. Burning question, can the Michigan quarterback carry a bad NFL team? Because he's going to get drafted by a bad NFL team. So the jury there is still a little bit out. Michael Penix, University of Washington. He's been injury-free 2 years in a row. I don't know that you can hold against him what happened to him at Indiana and downgrade him in the draft, because you base the draft on what he produced 2 years in Seattle, and that was spectacular. Cannon for an arm, good with the deep ball, moves the pocket. Now, that being said, you don't want him running. But again, look at Miami. Tua ran a lot at Alabama. Tua ran early in his career with the Dolphins and got hurt. Tua became a really good, proficient pocket passer. I think Penix could be like Tua. I think Penix's stock has risen some. Bo Nix, they're using the word systems guy against him. Smart cookie, to a degree questionable arm strength, can make all the throws short and under, crossing pattern, tremendous degree of accuracy, but I don't know about going deep whether Bo Nix is really going to be a successful big-time NFL quarterback. So those are the guys that are going to go in the first round. In the second round, Spencer Rattler from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. His grade has gone up, although he's not 6 foot five. That's an issue. Quarterback from Tulane has put up phenomenal numbers over 2 years. A move the pocket guy. He's probably going to wind up being a second round draft pick there. So that's the situation with the quarterbacks. And again, we couch everything in that cloud of lies, because there's lies everywhere. John, your response to the quarterback story.
Well, why doesn't Jaden Williams want to go to Washington, D.C.? I mean, it's a new ownership. It's the nation's capital. Remember back in the 80s with Joe Gibbs? I mean, the Washington Redskins were a terrific team, had a huge fan support across the nation. Why not go to D.C.?
Bad team.
Well, they're all bad teams.
Very few skill people. Mm-hmm. The quarterbacks just got pounded. I mean, last season, what happened to Howell, Sam Howell, the second-year quarterback at North Carolina, 69 quarterback sacks. Not a very good offensive line, not much in terms of the running game, although they did add Austin Eckler now in the offseason. It's going to be a building process. I don't know why the grudge, because he could come in and be the guy and just hope they build around him, and they will build around him because Josh Harris has a good reputation as a professional sports owner. That being said, I don't know that he can navigate his way to join Antonio Pierce, because the Raiders are so far back, and the price they'd have to pay to go from 13 to 2 would probably take him out of the rest of the draft and probably next year's draft too. So I don't know that Jaden Daniels has much to say. What's your take on all of a sudden the negatives around Drake May, and is there a real question about J.J. McCarthy?
You know, J.J. McCarthy just strikes me as obviously a great athlete, good team guy, but I don't think he's the savior for a franchise. You know, Drake May looked impressive in some of the games, but admittedly, I didn't watch a lot of North Carolina. But if he is anything like Roethlisberger, that sounds like a terrific pick.
And Roethlisberger was not a proven product coming out of Miami of Ohio. There were a pile of glitches about there, but look what he became.
Yeah, it was a tremendous story. The other name that you brought up was Spencer Rattler. And that's interesting because, you know, he was the starter at Oklahoma before he got displaced by Caleb Williams. So, and he was such a hot commodity as a freshman quarterback there because he was featured on these quarterback shows that were on Netflix and everything else. But his stock really dropped a lot. It's interesting that he's kind of having a little resurgence.
We'll see where this goes. You know, you can make it as a second-round pick. Hell, you can make it as a sixth-round pick.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Brock Purdy, and prior to that, Tom Brady. Fascinating. But it's my favorite philosophy, NFL's quarterback league. If you got a quarterback, good for you, John Riley. And John Riley, if you don't have a quarterback, you better go find a quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why all this is going on with all those guys. That's football coming up at the bottom of the hour. John Cooper, our lad's draft guide, will be with us as a co-host, and we'll get his draft board thoughts. Move on. Let's say we got other topics on the table on our Monday bonus podcast.
Yeah, here we go. Lakers, Clippers, out of the gate. These are interesting games.
Oh, but the whole first weekend of the NBA was kind of interesting. Lakers faded. They played a good first half in Denver. Last I checked, it's 48 minutes. They just don't play 48 minutes against the Nuggets. The Mavericks are a no-show because the Clippers just burned them at the stake right out of the gate. Lakers. Anthony Davis, LeBron James played a ton of minutes, put a lot of points on the board. They got no help at all. There's something going on with Denver versus D'Angelo Russell. He totally disappeared last year in the playoff series in the Western Conference Finals, and it hurt the team. He was MIA this game one this weekend. He went 6-for-20 shooting. He was 1-for-9 on threes. They overplayed him, prevented him from going to his left, made him put the ball, go to his right. His accuracy kind of faded away. They need DAR to come back and have a hell of a second game, game two. I will say this, Denver mugged Austin Reeves. He never found his rhythm. Where's Rui Hachimura? You know, you can't have him score one basket in a game. He's a key component. So I think the Lakers are going to try to get Reeves, Russell, Rui. Good looks in game two, but Denver's Denver. Denver plays 48 minutes, and you may slow them down, and they may be sloppy on defense at times, or maybe they miss a pile of threes like they did in game one. But what did they do from minutes 35 to 48? They just lit the Lakers up. Clippers, what a torch job in the first half. Clippers led by 29 in the first half against the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavs don't have a lot of athletes amongst their bigs, and that's a big issue. Mavs did not compete defensively at all, and they shot 22% in the first half. I mean, it was deplorable. They had a close-up shot of that owner. I really thought that owner...
Mark Cuban.
Yeah, Cuban. I thought that owner was going to fire Jason Kidd at halftime. I mean, it was brutal. I'm not convinced Jason Kidd's a great NBA head coach. But boy, the Clippers just tore them apart, and they did it, knowing full well there's no Kawhi Leonard.
Great.
But what Harden did, Harden had 28. Paul George kept hitting big shots. They got some production off the bench. Dallas in trouble. If they get down 0-2, yeah, they probably are in trouble. But Dallas is just going to have to come out and change its psyche, because there's no way that Dallas should have played that piss poor in L.A., against the Clippers. So your thoughts, Lakers, Clippers.
Well, the Lakers game, I watched most of it, and I saw Rui Hachimura making a lot of mental mistakes, just flubbing the ball when it was passed to him. I saw near the end of the game, Anthony Davis kind of, when Denver's breaking the other way on a fast break, and Davis is still under his own basket with a hand on his knees, exhausted. The Nuggets players were running, blowing past LeBron. So you talked about that with the age of those guys, the altitude in Denver. They just looked exhausted.
Well, they were. And I think it's going to be another process. And by the second half, the Lakers weren't the same team, and they looked gassed. As hard as those two great veteran superstars have to play, I just don't know that you can play that way for 48 minutes in Denver. And I don't know how you have body recovery coming back, because you only have one off day. You don't do much in that practice day. You got to recover, and then you look at 48 more minutes at altitude. It's something. You know, and I one other sidebar comment. I really fear for the future of Kawhi Leonard. The fact that this has gone on for, 20 days, the knee inflammation, it's not subsided. Now, they did an MRI, and they do not think he re-tore meniscus, which is what knocked him out last year. They just can't understand, with all the anti-inflammatories that he's on, they can't get the swelling to go down. I just don't know that he's going to play in the series, and I don't know what his long-term future is, because he's had two surgeries on that knee, and now it's come back again.
Yeah, that's concerning. You know, you've seen a lot of great talent. Their career's over with injuries. I saw the press conference with Paul George, and they asked him about Kawhi, and they said, yeah, we'd love to have him, but we think we're okay without him. We can get by. We've got good guys on this team. We're prepared, and we're going to hold the fort down until Kawhi comes back. I like that vibe coming from his teammates.
Well, they support him. I mean, there is no, they cannot control it. He can't control it. He's at the mercy of the medicals. But they do have Norm Powell, who can score. And obviously, they need good Russell Westbrook rather than loud Russell Westbrook. Westbrook came off the bench just yapping at everybody, the fans, the refs, the Dallas players. They just need Westbrook to be productive coming off the bench. But those guys have done that in stretches of time. I just think this is a tough series, but Dallas better show up, because I was disgusted. I was expecting this to be a hell of a game, and they just did not play with any passion, did not play any defense, and looked so out of sync. And Harden kept going down the floor and hitting kickstart jumpers and threes and falling to the floor and drawing fouls, etc. So
I was flipping back and forth between the Padre game and the Clipper game. And yeah, I was showing the Clipper game. It's like 20-something points. They were ahead. And I was like, what the heck's going on here? Especially without Kawhi. That was shocking. So do you think they can do that again? It's the next game's in L.A., right?
Yeah, first two are in L.A. So yeah, they could. I think what has to change is the mindset, the mentality of Jason Kidd's team.
Mm.
Big issue there. Okay, so we've covered football. We've covered basketball here in the first half. Let's go to what's going on at the Diamond.
Yeah, the Padres, the Dodgers, the Angels. It's been a rough week.
Oh, nice headline. Skid City.
Yeah.
Yes, the Padres can hit home runs. Yes, they have the occasional big inning. But there's no consistency to putting hits together. They're just not doing it collectively, and they're not doing it with any consistency. Joe Musgrove, pretty good outing on Sunday. I'll tell you what, if they get him back to what he was prior with Cease, with King, that's a pretty good front end of the rotation. A lot of dogfight those three starting pitchers. So we'll keep an ear on that. Xander Bogaerts coming off a really bad stretch, was 4-for-41, finally hit a home run. I'll ask this question. Should he be the leadoff hitter? Maybe this is not the right place for him in the batting order. He's already walking around with the burden on his shoulders. They've moved me to second base, and there have been some flubs there defensively. Maybe Xander shouldn't be the leadoff guy. Maybe the leadoff guy should be the kid, Jackson Merrill, who's still hitting over 300. Maybe the leadoff guy ought to be Mr. Energy Profar, who can walk, does get hits, occasional power, runs like hell on the base. Maybe Profar should be the guy. They need something different, I think, at the top of the batting order. And they're going to have to figure out this runner in scoring position crisis, because at one stretch they were 1-for-20 when they lost the three games in a row there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's batting order issues with the Padres right now that just are not in sync. Dodgers, they lose 7 of 9 at home, lost three series in a row. Yes, they did punch the Mets in the mouth with a 10-0 victory on Sunday, but I had forgotten this. I went back and looked it up this morning. Dodger pitching staff's in tatters right now. They got 9 arms on the DL. They have 7 wow. starters. Obviously, we know about Walker Buehler mm-hmm. and Dustin May and Clayton Kershaw, Tony Gonsolin. They got 7 starters on the DL, and they got 2 relievers on the DL. We've forgotten about Blake Treinen and Brusdar Graterol. Now, one or two of them, Buehler is throwing one more rehab game, but he's not been dominant. So I don't know if they know where he is really physically. He's thrown 95, but then he's walked batters, and then he hasn't been accurate. His last start, he lasted 2 2/3 innings. So that's a big issue there. And then, the Dodgers, two of their other young guys are still on the DL. Bobby Miller's not ready to come off. And M. Sheehan, who pitched really well in the pennant race last year, he's not ready to come off. So the Dodgers are, because of the pitching woes, and there are guys that are coming, are not 100%. And the Angels are starting to reel. Reed Detmers has become an ace of the staff. He's got an ERA just a shade over 1, which is pretty impressive.
Wow.
But Patrick Sandoval's regressed. He was the number one guy last year. He's given up a lot of home runs. Mike Trout is hitting. Anthony Rendon got hurt again, hamstring. Looks like it's significant. Now, he at one point, he was hitting 0.73. He was getting booed. He started to hit, pushed his average up to 2.57, got hurt running the bases. He's gone. The young shortstop, Zach Neto, started to hit. The young catcher, Logan Ohapi, is hitting with some power. I don't know what the future is, but they really need Mickey Moniak and Joe Adell, both number one draft picks. They need them to hit more than 120, and it's a big issue for the Angels. Ron Washington he's got a fractured roster. He's got a fractured batting order. He's got a substandard pitching staff, and they're starting to skid. So, Padres, Dodgers, Angels, the floor is yours.
Well, I agree with you. This whole thing about a runner in scoring position on third base, it was one of those games. Was it in Milwaukee or was it in against the Blue Jays where Jackson Merrill led off with a triple?
And sat there.
You know, it was on third, no outs. So that's happened a lot.
Only superseded by bases loaded, nobody out, and nobody scores.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what the heck? I mean, that's the thing the Padres were saying, that we understand situational hitting and you take what the game gives you. And we just need a guy to punch a ball through the hole. They don't need to hit a grand slam. And sometimes you wonder if they buy into that, you know, or are they instead going for the glory home run?
Here's the batting order. Who do you have leading off? Who do you want leading off?
Well, first of all, I think changing the batting order isn't as big of an impact, but it's only one of the few things a manager can do. I think it's more about affecting the psyche of the hitter. But Ha-Seong Kim has had success at the leadoff, and so has Profar. So moving Xander back would be fine. I mean, when Xander is Xander, he's a great kind of RBI guy. Put the ball in play, hit some doubles in the gap, that kind of a guy. That sounds pretty good at 5 or 6. And I think Merrill may be a little too young, but he could do it. But if it were me, I would do Ha-Seong Kim at number one.
And the Dodger pitching staff, can you believe how many names are on the DL?
Yeah.
Nine.
Yeah, nine is a lot. And we've been talking about all those guys coming back, you know, later this, you know, next few months. But it takes time when you come back from Tommy John, right? Like that first year back, you're not really yourself. And it takes you about another year until you kind of really get back to what you were. So, yeah, Bueller, you know, anyone, Bueller, you know, we're going to have to find out what he can do.
Speaking of pitching, let me throw this at you. Just hold on to the table. Your guy Trevor Bauer is pitching in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Trevor Bauer struck out 14 and tied a Mexican League record of striking out 9 in a row, a record that was set in 1964. No offers yet, but he is pitching for Rolos, owned in Mexico City. So he's had a couple good starts so far. He's trying to pitch his way back across the border.
Hell yeah. Good for him. You know, he's showing his stuff. You know, I watched a video of him. It was like a 30-minute long video he posted on social media of all the different things he was doing working out.
Well, it's a science to him.
Yeah. You know, and there's certain days he does his long toss and the precision of the way he just plays catch. And he was quarantined for a while because he was sick and he was in a hotel room and that set him back. So it was very interesting how he breaks all that down. You don't normally see players using social media that way. That might spook some MLB teams thinking this guy is not a team player. He's a one-off, you know, celebrity.
Well, the celebrity is trying to do anything he can to get back across the border down to San Ysidro and sign a contract with somebody in baseball. But, you know, the quality of the Mexican League is not Major League Baseball. But to strike out 14 guys in, I want to say, 6 innings, he struck out 9 in a row in one spot. That's pretty impressive.
Wow. So out of the 18 outs, 14 were strikeouts.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's the Mexican League.
Yeah.
Next baseball topic on the table here.
Okay. So here we're talking about bad teams in lots of places, Lee. Yeah, some of these teams look really bad.
Jerry Reinsdorf has been an enormously successful owner of professional sports. White Sox, Chicago Bulls, what he's done in his business world, his influence on the commissioner's office. I don't understand the methodology of what they're doing with White Sox baseball. I mean, he's cleaned house again. He's gone through general managers. He's gone through managers. He's let his baseball people move people off the roster. He let free agents go. The Chi Sox are 3-18.
3-18
at Comiskey Park this season. Oh, the fans are booing. They don't have a lot of good players, a lot of young players. But the good players they have are always hurt. Yoan Moncada, Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, they're always on the disabled list. All three of them have been hurt the first 4 weeks of the baseball season. And, of course, they traded away Dylan Cease. They've got like a rookie league pitching rotation. So Chi Sox are 3-18, owned by a pretty influential, pretty successful track record owner in Jerry Reinsdorf. Rockies, what a disaster. All their pitchers are hurt. They don't have enough pitchers. They're 5-17. You know, they signed Chris Bryant, and I thought, this is a unique acquisition. He's going to Denver, Mile High Stadium, thin air, home run hitter. You kind of build a piece of your roster to fit your stadium. I thought, this is going to work. He can't stay healthy. He's back on the DL again with another back injury. It's the third year in a row that Chris Bryant's gone down with something of significance. That's really bad news for Bud Black. And he's lost his top starter, Kyle Freeland, who's gone on the disabled list with shoulder problems. In Miami, we've talked about the irresponsible ownership of Bruce Sherman running off the general manager, Kim Ng, after she built the team into a playoff slot last year. Miami is 6-17. Three of their top five starters are all on the DL with what? Elbow surgery. It's just a disaster in Miami. And you look at the bottom of the standings in the American League West, Houston,
yeah,
7-16. They now have six starting pitchers on the disabled list.
Six.
Verlander just came off, but another one, Framber Valdez, just left, and he went on, and they all got the same issues. They all got either shoulder or they got elbow. So as good as their bats are in Houston, you keep sending out AAA guys from Rock Round in the Pacific Coast League and send them out to pitch at Minute Maid Park, they're getting lit up. So they're 7-16. Boy, there's some bad baseball being played right now.
Yeah, how about Josh Hader in Houston? I mean, he's just been terrible. You know, he's just getting ripped to shreds. And I saw in the Best 15 this morning that the first baseman was demoted as well, right?
Well, they signed Jose Abreu to a monster contract, $78
million. Yeah.
He's hitting 073. And they're talking about just sitting him down. They can't eat the contract. But all of a sudden, it's like he woke up an old man this year and he can't hit. He had a great, great career with the White Sox. Yeah, I think he spent 15 years in Chicago as a captain and finally left as a free agent when they elected not to re-sign him. Signs in Houston, and 073 is terrible.
Yeah, and the Padres were in the running for that guy, too. And I remember Padre fans were disappointed he didn't sign here. The other team, the White Sox, has always been a puzzle to me because, yeah, they won the World Series like 15, 20 years ago. They beat Houston, I think. But there hasn't been a lot of White Sox championships. They're not normally in the playoffs. I mean, Reinsdorf was terrific as the Bulls owner, but I don't think he's all that great as the White Sox owner.
He hasn't. He's gone through a lot of different general managers and a lot of relegations of how do we build this? Do we do it with kids? Well, we're going to suffer. Do we do it with rental free agents? But gee, what if those old guys don't pan out? Now they're back trying to do it with kids. They've traded all their players. They traded Dylan Cease away. He was a cornerstone of not a very good starting rotation. So that's why they're sitting at where they are right now. Okay, so we go from baseball. A couple of other topics on the table here in the first half. Let's talk puck.
Oh, man. I mean, the games on television over the weekend were fantastically.
Did you enjoy the Molson's Canadian I sent over with the sub sandwiches?
Yes, I did.
NHL, let's talk about what's gone on. Storyline tonight, Kings, Edmonton Oilers. The Kings are built to go deep into the NHL Western Conference playoffs. Edmonton is like a barricade on the highway. Three straight years they played the Oilers. Three straight years the Kings have been eliminated by those guys. The Kings got goal scorers, there's no doubt about it. Kopitar and Kempe between them, 54 goals. They got Fiala. They got Pierre-Luc Dubois. They got Drew Doughty. Mikey Anderson on defense. The only concern is I don't know that they have enough goaltending. That becomes a real big issue when you get to the playoffs. Kings think they've got enough guns to do something, but that's Connor McDavid, 132 points. That's Zach Hyman, a journeyman who scored 54 goals. That's Leon Draisaitl, who's got 41. That's an unbelievable offense. And the difference in Edmonton tonight compared to Edmonton last year is their young goaltender has kind of grown up on the job, Stuart Skinner. He's playing much better in goal as a second-year starter. So Kings-Oilers, that's the marquee game. How about Winnipeg, Colorado on Sunday night? Over 15,000 whiteout. Everybody wore white. And that was a close hockey game till the final 16 minutes. They scored six goals in the final 16 minutes. Those goaltenders were under siege, and Winnipeg wound up winning. Kyle Clifford, Tyler Toffoli, Shoffley, That's a pretty good collection of guys who can score on different lines in Winnipeg, and they got Connor Hellebuyck, maybe the most underrated best goaltender in the NHL. Now, they've got snipers everywhere, and they got a red-hot goaltender, and Colorado was shocked that they got beat because Colorado is really good, led by Nathan MacKinnon, maybe the MVP in the league. A lot of criticism today of the Colorado goaltender who let in seven goals, didn't play really well, especially at crunch time. So Winnipeg's got one win under their belt, and old Canada, can you imagine if they get the second one before the series ships back to Denver? Vancouver, Nashville. Nashville's crafty, Nashville's fast. Vancouver's big and physical. Vancouver just kept hitting Nashville last night, and by the middle of the second period, Nashville looked gassed. Their offense was gone. They couldn't get the puck into the zone. Canucks are really dangerous, and Rick Tocchet, their coach's philosophy is you take no penalties, you take no BS in front of the net, nobody touches your goaltender, we're going to crash the crease at the other end of the ice, we're going to put bodies in front of that goaltender, and we're going to throw pucks at those bodies. They scored two goals that were critical through screens. Poor goaltender. Nashville's goaltender had no idea where the puck was. There were so many legs and so many bigs in front of him. And that's how Vancouver wins its games. Vancouver had 109 points during the regular season. New York Rangers beat Washington. They got goal scorers, led by Artemi Panarin, 49 goals this season. And they're tough, and they're physical. New York's a pretty good team. Boston, it's like playing a bunch of barroom bouncers. They got so many big bodies, and they just lean all over you. And they just eradicated the Toronto Maple Leaf goal scorers. It was like Austin Matthews, who scored 69 this season, was not on the ice. He never saw the puck. They couldn't get him the puck. And the few good shots they got, their goaltending made them say, Boston is so bloody big. Their forwards are bigger than the defenders are just... they're like traffic pylons. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a fascinating series. And I'll tell you, the two other teams from the States that are not getting as much recognition, and they're really good. They're not fancy, but they're workmanlike. Florida Panthers, Dallas Stars, they got players. So these playoffs are going to be good. In my heart, I'd love to see a complete all-Canada Stanley Cup final because I think it'd be great for the game, and mm-hmm. It's their game. I understand their game, but boy, these playoff series, and they're all best of sevens. There's no short series, pal. It's the toughest cup to win. So you enjoyed my Molson's Canadiens, so tell me what you saw in hockey.
The energy in those arenas was out of control, and it's so much different than an NBA playoff game, isn't it? You know, just the energy in the room and the whiteout there in Winnipeg, and the way the camera would go to the fans outside watching on the big screen.
In the street.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And you see a lot of places around North America with, you know, those big screens. I remember when the Toronto Raptors were going deep in the NBA finals, all the fans were out there. We the North. So good on Winnipeg. And, you know, I watched quite a bit of the Canucks game, too, and that was a lot of fun. I was telling you, I was texting you, I really like how they wear blue and green. It kind of matches the Seahawks and the Mariners.
The regional colors.
The regional colors. I like that. But what was it the Winnipeg game where that guy shot the goal and it hit the post three times? Mm-hmm. And it just was barely in, like by a micro millimeter. Yep. But that was incredible camera work there, too.
Yeah. Philosophy in the NHL in playoffs. All out, every shift, every night. That's how you play NHL playoff hockey.
Balls to the wall.
Exactly. Take no prisoners. We go from that. Last topic here in the first half involves college football.
San Diego State. You went down to Snapdragon and saw the red and black game. How'd you like it?
I was disappointed. I expected more. But again, They've only had 15 practices in spring drills. They're all going to go to summer school. And I'm not talking about math class. They'll all be there enrolled in summer school, but they will be enrolled in terms of classroom and what they can do on the field without their coaches because they have a lot of work to do. A.J. Duffy, the Florida State transfer, more experience than anybody else. Was 7 for 11. I think he threw for 112 yards. He threw two 36-yard touchdown passes. I think he will be the starting quarterback. The young incoming freshman quarterback, Danny O'Neill, it'd be unfair to say he was overwhelmed, but he was overwhelmed. He was only 2 of 6, and just he didn't have a lot of help. So that's a learning curve for him, but those are going to be the two quarterbacks. I like what I saw from the wide receivers. We didn't get to see all the Aztec wide receivers. Joshon Polk out of West Virginia, who is probably going to be one of their top guys, did not play because of a nagging injury. But Lewis Brown, a wide receiver transfer from Colorado State, caught everything they threw in his direction. I think he had 4 for 56. They threw to their tight ends. They got a truckload of tight ends that are obviously in the pattern catching passes. Sean Lewis's whole thing is about mismatches. I watched him when they were doing, to begin with, they did individual drills. My wide receiver, your cornerback. And I watched these speed guys come off the line of scrimmage, and they did double moves. These guys were getting open. Holy cow, I was really impressed. Didn't see as much of that when the actual scrimmage began. But they're teaching them the mechanics of getting open. How you run, boom, boom. How you do double moves. How you do stops, fades, crossing patterns, yards after catch. I was pretty impressed with the teaching of the skill position. But they've got to work on that. They have no run game. Couldn't run block worth a lick. Running backs had very little room to run. There are six returning running backs from last year. All the running backs stayed. Nobody transferred.
Really?
And I think the running backs have the idea, we're going to run the football out of sprint draws, which they will, and they're going to throw to me out of the backfield, which they will. So these running backs, led by Keenan Christen, and Lucky Sutton had the best game run on the ball, but they didn't do very much. They're all going to get their hands on the ball a wide variety of ways, but they got a lot of work to be done in the offensive line. A lot of work to be done in the defensive front. And I'm a little concerned. The defensive front looks really undersized to me. There's only one starter back. So transfer portal door is open. There may be some more guys, either O-linemen, D-linemen, coming in to join. So maybe it's unfair to say disappointed, but I expected more. But they've only had 15 practices together in this really thick Aztec playbook. So
right on.
That's what summer school is going to be all about before they get to the end of August and the open season. And I talked to some other people that were up there, and their schedule at home, they play Oregon State and Washington State from the Pac-12, a.k.a. Pac-2, here.
Oh, nice.
So that's really going to be good. But their road schedule is really, really going to be hard. So that's my assessment of San Diego State. Hey, we get to halftime. Couple of items here still to come. NFL Draft Preview is just around the corner. John Cooper from Our Lads Draft Guide is going to join us. A reminder, if you're a football junkie, you need to get and subscribe to this. It's an unbelievable 150-page booklet about the draft, the history of the draft, a look at all the teams and their needs, a look at free agency, and then the depth charts of all the teams as we go to the draft. So just go to Our Lads Draft Guide. You can order it. You can get it by the end of the week, and you'll have it in your library. That's what we have used for 30 years. John Cooper, Our Lads Draft Guide, is going to join us shortly. Our podcast is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores. John, what's the next project here in the house? Because I like your snazzy European front door. I know what you've done with the cabinets and the bookcases in your man's cave. What's the next project for Dixie Line at your house?
We have to replace some of our decking in our backyard. And that's something that's on my list to get done. The good news is Dixie Line has Trex and TimberTech and all the top brands there. And the quality of that composite decking is so good. It withstands the salt air and the sun. So go check them out at Dixie Line Lumber.
And by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We're all going to need help with our eyes. I did, and it's helped a great deal. Whether it's just vision exams, new glasses, contact lenses, or something more significant like a retina problem, issues with glaucoma, as well as cataracts, think about them. You'll need help. These are the people to go to. North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. John, these are the people that we salute. And our podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber. As we like to say here, for 2024, build it or fix it. We guarantee you will enjoy it via Dixie Line. And we're ready, getting ready to talk NFL football. John Cooper joining us shortly here as part of our podcast. John Riley, just a reminder, when we're done, We're asking fans to comment about the NFL draft, asking fans to comment about what's going on as it relates to the Padres, the Dodgers, the Angels. You got comments about the NBA playoffs, NHL, or even the Aztecs. John, how do they get involved in Fans Forum?
Yeah, you can get involved in Fans Forum. Everyone's piling in. 4R, XLA, I see Callum, I see Bobby, I see Schickster in the list, and Manny. So if you got a question or comment for Lee or for, Lee about the NFL draft, boy, we got all the info coming here with John Cooper from RLAD. So just type in your question or comment in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or X, and we'll get you involved in Fans Forum.
And a reminder, go to my website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. I write on it every day of the week. Fill out the orange box on the front side. You can then join Hacksaw's Insiders group. Make sure you subscribe to everything we're doing. You'll get all the alerts on the YouTube channel. And share. Tell all your friends what we're doing. We'll take 5-star rating. We'll take thumbs up, too, here on our Monday bonus podcast. We go to the second half of our Monday bonus podcast, and as promised, it's time to talk NFL draft more specifically. Those of you who have followed us know that one of the things we rely on is data from scouts, people who put out publications. And it's a pleasure to have with us John Cooper, one of the draft analysts for Our Lad's Draft Guide based out of the Upper Midwest. You can subscribe to it. You can order it by going to Our Lad's Draft.com, as we've talked about throughout the course of the show. John Cooper, here comes the National Football League draft, and I have a philosophy as a longtime voice of the Chargers and the Seahawks. If you got a quarterback in the NFL, good for you. And if you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, you better go get one. And that seems to be the storyline going towards Thursday's first round. John, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. And a quarterback's going to be the marquee storyline.
I think so. I think you could. I don't know if this is going to happen, but you could see four quarterbacks go in the top four picks. That would be, I think, a first or a rarity, but that's a possibility. But there's going to have to be a trade in there for that to happen.
John, is this the greatest array of offensive people you have seen in the first round of the draft in a long time? I mean, we keep hearing rumors that there could be 22 offensive players go out of the first 32 picks.
The simple answer is yes. I mean, we don't necessarily have a top 10 grade on a defensive player. That doesn't mean one won't go there. But, I'm looking at our grades. Yeah, we do have some. I think we've got one top 10 grade right now on a defensive player. And this was done back at the end of March. So with some of the pro days that came out, that could have changed.
John, let's talk about the quarterbacks right at the top of the draft board. What do you like about Caleb Williams? He became a one-man gang at USC after things fell apart last season. You know, it was tough on him, but he was a warrior. He just never quit, never gave up. He was productive. Everything else around him fell apart. What are the pros and cons of Caleb Williams at USC?
Well, I think the pros is I'm going to use Dan Shanka's favorite word to describe this, called extemporaneous. His ability to do things off platform is what makes him great. He's got some of that Patrick Mahomes style in him, being able to throw from different arm slots, make plays out of nothing. Those are the things he has. That's a unique skill set that you don't find in many quarterbacks. That said, there's weaknesses there, too. He makes the majority of his plays off platform, so you don't see him making plays in the pocket. And when he has done that, he's been a little spotty. He throws the ball into coverage. He would prefer to take a chance than to take an outlet, for example, to throw a check down. And, I think that's a skill that quarterbacks have to learn. They have to learn to take what the defense gives them. And so far, we haven't seen that in Caleb Williams. We've seen, like, the Notre Dame game is a classic example. A lot of forces. Granted, a lot of pressure on him. Offensive line didn't play the best. But, there's some things that he's going to have to be coached into.
Let's talk about Drake May, North Carolina. Are we talking about the one that didn't have as good a season this last fall as he had the fall prior? Some people equate him maybe to be the potential of a big Ben Roethlisberger. Others think he's too much of a gamble. How does Our Lad's Draft Guide read Drake May?
Well, we graded him a little lower. We still have a top 10 grade on him, but barely. But again, quarterbacks are always going to be pushed up a little higher. He's got some mechanical issues, we think, rotating his lower body. He's not consistent throwing the ball outside the numbers. Big, strong kid, big, strong arm, throws the deep ball. You know, he'd probably win the long throw contest. So he does. He's got a lot of talent, but there's going to have to be some coaching to take place with him as well.
Jaden Daniels, we saw him start at Arizona State, be a one-man gang, went to LSU. The numbers he put up under Brian Kelly were phenomenal. I don't know how to read him, because maybe I'm biased, because what I saw out here, I was not all that impressed, and he was a one-man show because it didn't seem to be a lot around him. How do you rank him?
Well, you know, we look at him. We rank him as our number one quarterback right now. You know, and looking at him, you know, going back to the ASU days, you know, Dan's out in Arizona now, so he's seen him, you know, there. And he was kind of Caleb Williams-like, you know, in terms of some of the things he did. But he went from a conference that's not known for defense to the SEC, which is, and he excelled. He excelled under Brian Kelly. All the quarterback metrics that you want to look at, he was the top guy last year in college football. Now, is he a one-year wonder? I don't think so. I mean, I think he I think he's a little more advanced than some of these other guys. He drops the ball in the bucket, you know, in terms of almost Aaron Rodgers-like his ball placement on deep balls. He can throw guys open in tight man cover. He can take off and run. He's got great speed. He can make the plays off platform, but he also plays in the pocket. You know, and we think he's the safest of the quarterback picks. So there's holes there, too. You know, velocity is a question on some balls. But, you know, we've, you know, been analyzing these guys and ad nauseum, and we've had some quarterback coaches that have taken a look for us, too. And, you know, we've concluded that, you know, they all have holes, but he's the number one guy. And, you know, just one caveat, too, as an old NFL general manager once told me, Coop, you never know what you're going to get in a quarterback until you get him in your building and start working with him. And that's why we've had so many first-round busts. So as high as we are on Daniels and some of these other guys, who knows? Let's wait and see what happens.
The Michigan man, J.J. McCarthy, there's no doubt that he competes. There's no doubt that he's got an edge to his game. But there is also the reality he was surrounded by phenomenal Michigan men. Now, Jim Harbaugh continues to extol the virtues of his former quarterback, and maybe that's influenced a bunch of people. Is he a complete quarterback? How do you take what you've seen in limited structure, because he was surrounded by so many great people, and equate that to being able to do the job at the NFL level?
Well, you know, I'm in the Chicagoland area, and we're very aware of him. He's from the Chicagoland area, so we've seen him play in high school. And, you know, he's a guy that is not prone to making mistakes. You know, he was driving a Cadillac in Michigan, you know, in terms of the offense and the players that he had around him, whether it was the offensive line, the running backs, the receivers, he had a really good team to play with. And he did not have to carry that team. He averaged 22 throws a game, you know, and the offense was relatively limited in the passing game. But one of the keys there is he didn't make mistakes. He showed a long arm, and when he did have to make a play with his feet, he could do it. So there's some unknowns there as far as, is he going to be able to be the guy that can make it happen in the fourth quarter when your team's trailing? You know, does he have that makeup? And, you know, we kind of think he does. And like I said, there's still some unknowns, but we really like his talent. The one weakness is, you know, he throws on one plane very often. So layering the ball, you know, is something you'll have to work on. But they'll all have things to work on. The NFL is, those defensive backs are so quick. The multiple coverages are more multiple. And so there's going to be a learning curve with him, as with all the guys. But we like him.
John Cooper, our Lads draft guide, one of their lead analysts, is with us. Our NFL draft preview, our Monday bonus podcast continues here in San Diego. John, of course, is with us from the Upper Midwest. John, let's go to the wide receiver core. These guys look spectacular. I mean, there are gamers, and whether that's Marvin Harrison, who you saw a lot, or obviously it's neighbors down at LSU, or the next wave, the kids out of Texas. How do you rank the receivers?
Well, we really like Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, he's a guy that he's a playmaker. He's got great size, speed. I mean, he's kind of a do-it-all player. He's got a catch radius. So he can go up and get the ball. He can take it away from defensive backs. I mean, we're very, very high on him. And at one point, we thought he was the number one player in this draft, and we may still. But receivers don't go number one very often. but we think he'll be the first receiver taken. Malik Nabers is just a hair behind him, and, you know, he may be the best before it's over. Speed, route running ability. You know, let's be honest. I mean, I'm so high on Jaden Daniels, but let's take a look at a couple of receivers that he had, him and Thomas. Nabers is a blue chip receiver, and he also had a great offensive line to play with too. So, but he helped make Nabers what he is too. So they work both ways, but we really like Malik Nabers. After that, you know, like most people, Roma Dunze from Washington, big kid, 6'2", runs well. He's got a good catch radius too. He can go get the ball. And those three, we think, are top 10 picks. We'll be very surprised if either any one of those guys is not in the top 10. You know, and of course, after that, you know, you've still got a good core of receivers. Brian Thomas, we mentioned, from LSU. You know, you've got Worthy from Texas. You got Ladd McConkey from Georgia. You know, this is a group of receivers that you can go on and on and on, you know, in terms of the number of guys that are solid players, you know, in this draft. I mean, you could see six probably in the first round. And then there's going to be a good cadre of guys that you'll be able to see, you know, as time goes on.
You don't draft tight ends real high. Brock Bowers might be the exception to the rule. Top five or inside top 10?
You know, you talk about maybe guys that are falling a little bit. And again, I don't know. Falling is a relative thing because it's all based on who's saying what. I think he's a top 10 pick. He may not be the fifth pick in the draft. I remember way back when we had a debate within our Arlad group back in February when Jim Harbaugh got the job and with the Chargers, would that be a guy he'd want? He likes tight ends, you know, going all the way back to when he was at San Diego U. So would that be a player that, you know, he might draft, you know? So we think he could be a top five. You know, the Chicago Bears, the rumor is that, you know, Bears floating around that they might consider taking Bowers at number 9. I don't think so, but he's definitely top 10 talent. Great inside receiver. He blocks on the move pretty well too. So a little undersized for your inline blocking tight end, but boy, is he a good receiver.
John Cooper, our Ledge Draft Guide, with us on Monday bonus broadcast NFL Draft Preview. John, us old school guys, we like offensive linemen, and this is a load of offensive tackles. Obviously, Joe Alt, Notre Dame, the big tackle, Penn State, the big tackle, Oregon State. Rank them for us.
Well, our current rankings have Alt as the number one guy, followed closely by Olu Fashanu, then Latham from Alabama, you know, Fontenot from Washington, who's very versatile. He could play guard and be a very, very good guard. Talese Fuagua from Oregon State, big kid, 324 pounds. A little bit raw, but tremendous player. And if you can keep him on the field, Amarius Mims from Georgia, he's had some injury issues, is right up there. And then Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. We could see, in fact, we did a mock draft. We had 8 tackles go in the first round. That would be a first. I don't know if that's going to happen. But in the mock draft we did back in March, that's how many guys we had.
Question about running backs. Outside of Jonathan Brooks, this is kind of a weird draft. Is it because the running back has been de-emphasized in the league, or is it just the fact that we don't have a bunch of studs? And Brooks is coming off his own surgery issue, too, and yet he's going to be viewed as a number one pick somewhere on that board on Thursday. What's happened to the running back position, or is it just a weird year?
Well, I think it's both. Two things, you know, can be true. And I think there's two things. I think unless you get a Saquon Barkley type of a running back, somebody that's that good that you're going to take him high in the draft, you're probably not seeing a first round pick hardly anymore in the running back area. You know, people say, hey, we can pick one of these guys up later on. And oftentimes we're looking at a depth player. We're not looking at a feature back because we're rotating these running backs a lot. Typically you've got a 3-back running back room, and you got one guy that's Mr. Inside, one guy that's Mr. Outside, a guy that's a great third down back, a receiver. You know, the teams that I watch a lot, you know, that's pretty much the way they operate. So you're not looking very often at a feature back, a Jim Brown, an OG, you know, those kind of guys. You're not looking at that. You're looking at guys that are going to share the load. And, you know, this is a year that you've got the best running back in our mind is Jonathan Brooks. as you said. And he's the only guy that would have a first-round grade. But coming off that injury, will he be in camp, ready to go? He might. He's probably more of a second-round pick. A mid-second-round pick is what we see. You know, and after that, it's kind of hard to predict who's going to go. I mean, we like Jalen Wright from Tennessee because he's got great speed, great outside ability, and he runs with fairly good power. We're very high on Blake Corum, higher than I'm sure everybody else. We just think he makes plays. He's one of those guys that doesn't have great skill, comparatively speaking, doesn't have the greatest speed in the world, but the kid just knows how to pick a crease and make a play, and he runs hard. And we think he's a solid third-round pick for somebody.
Let's go to the defensive side of the football. There are edge rushers, but there does not seem to be the volume of really great defensive players at all the different positions. Is that a fair assessment?
It's exactly the way we feel. We think the corner position has some depth. You know, we think there are some guys on the edge that are good players, but they all have things that, you know, that you're going to have to take a look at and see, hey, can we correct some of these issues? You know, there's not the great size. There's some guys that have some injury concerns. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, where all these guys go in terms of, you know, how they're going to be drafted. You know, we think Verse from Florida State is a really good pass rusher. Dallas Turner, Verse is probably the most complete guy. Latu from UCLA, if it wasn't for the injury concerns, I think he would be the consensus number one and maybe the only top 10 edge rusher. But I think some NFL teams, very conservative in terms of past history with the injury. He's been healthy for 2 years, but I think some teams are going to say we're not going to put him on our board for a first round pick simply because of that injury concern. And with a neck, he was told he shouldn't play again, but he played very well for 2 years. And he's one of my favorites in this draft. And so I'm very interested to see where he's going to go. But, you know, you get down the line, you got some guys that do some things. They've got good redeeming qualities. Chop Robinson's a developmental prospect. Darius Robinson from Missouri. Austin Booker is very intriguing as a guy. He's only a one-year starter. He transferred from Minnesota to Kansas, and he just lit it up at 240 pounds. He plays a lot bigger than he is. So I'm interested to see where a guy like that's going to go. Is it going to be strictly a 3-4 team, although he didn't drop off in coverage? So,
John, let me ask you about who's jumped the board? Who's risen a little bit going towards Thursday? And has anybody dropped?
Well, that's kind of hard to assess, but you know, there's a couple of guys that we're hearing some things about that might not be as highly regarded as they once were. You know, Devondre Sweat, the big tackle from Texas. There's a conditioning issue I've heard. I don't know if that's accurate or not. This is just some stuff that's out there. Nate Wiggins, the corner from Clemson, who lit it up at the combine. Watch the tape on him. He's not the most physical guy in the world. You know, we think he could drop. At one point, people had him as the number one corner. We at one point were tempted, but you watch the film and, you know, he's not the most physical guy in the world, but he is a shutdown corner in terms of the coverage. Keon Coleman, the big wide receiver, spectacular plays, not the greatest route runner in the world. You know, getting back to, you know, the defense, Peyton Wilson, you know, Butkus Award winner, Bednarik Award winner, but he's had a lot of surgeries and there's going to be some injury flags with him. And some of the traits aren't the best. He's got a lot of athletic traits, but you know, the wingspan, a lot of teams are really big on the wingspan. And so that's, you know, not the best. So those are some guys that, you know, might drop a little bit in the draft. You know, it is a good year for corners. You know, I mean, you know, mentioning some of those guys, Cooper DeJean is a guy that I'm very interested to see how people are going to view him. We really like him. At one point, we felt he was the number one, one of the top defensive players in this draft, but where are you going to play him? You know, does he have the speed to be a outside corner consistently in the NFL, playing man-to-man? So there's a cornerback that is one of our, I guess you'd call him an intriguing prospect for us as to where he's going to go. Arnold from Alabama really came on as a corner. And McKinstry at one time was our number one corner. We kind of dropped him down a little bit for a couple of reasons, but still see us a first round player there.
John Cooper with us, our Lads draft guide, as our draft preview continues on our Monday bonus podcast. John, let's jump around trade rumors. Is it impossible to trade high into the first round because of the price you have to pay? And there's so many rumors out there, what Minnesota, who's got two number ones, might want to do, what Denver, what maybe the Raiders might attempt to do. How hard is it to jump up? And which of the rumors do you think have validity? Or are we all a victim of the Liars Club in the month of April?
I'd say 50-50. You know, the one of my favorite people in the NFL is the late Bill Tobin. And he just passed away. So I'm going to mention something he told me once. He says, you listen to all the rumors, believe a third of them. And you don't know which third to believe. So I thought that was really a pretty good, you know, a pretty good way of looking at it. But I think that Vikings rumor has some legs. And the reason I say that, they need a quarterback. And I could see them really fighting to trade up to that number four spot with the Cardinals, you know, especially with that extra pick. You know, I think there'll be some negotiating going on. The price might be pretty steep, but they need a quarterback. Raiders, Broncos, Bears, they're all talking about, you know, I'm hearing rumors that all those guys are looking to trade up. The Bears, not for a quarterback, but the Bears maybe to get Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, to add to that receiver core to go along with to helping a guy like Caleb Williams, assuming he's their pick, helping him down the road, you know, and that would be, I think, a good move for the Bears, although they've got some really good needs, you know, besides, you know, quarterback, you know, in the draft, and they could meet some of those needs with that number nine pick. But, you know, Raiders and Broncos, they need a quarterback, although the Raiders, I'm not convinced that they do. You know, I think they like the guys they got, you know, McKinchu and Aiden O'Connell. You know, I think they may just let those guys fight it out. And Denver, I think Sean Payton's got his eye on some quarterbacks down the line, too, that he would be able to take. So we'll see. The deal would have to be right.
The guys that would trade back, you know, we've heard New England, and I don't know whether that's smoke and mirrors because they desperately need a quarterback. But boy, if you trade out of number three, you could probably get a bonanza of picks, late first round picks, second round, third round. Obviously, Arizona needs receivers, but they could drop down a few slots and probably still get a really good receiver.
Right.
The Chargers out here are the most unique one because they're going to get a gem at number five. But if they trade back, they could get multiple picks and still get really good football players. So the philosophy of what New England might be thinking, what Arizona will probably do and what the Chargers might or might not do? Quick thought?
For sure. You know there's that thing that came out recently in the news about some statistics on teams that trade back versus teams that trade up. And the teams that trade back generally do better than the teams that trade up. So I think trading back for somebody like Jim Harbaugh would be a great idea, especially with the needs that they have. You know, I think Minnesota is the one to look at, you know, in terms of, you know, where they might be able to, you know, get a guy that they want. But again, you know, the Raiders possibility, Broncos possibly, or maybe somebody that wants one of those really good receivers, you know, in the first round, you know, trading up into that spot with the Chargers, you know, or with the Patriots. You're going to have to give the Patriots a boatload to get them to trade out of number three. But stranger things have happened.
Is there a new breed of general manager that's calling the shots in the NFL now? I call them Ivy League guys, analytical guys like Major League Baseball has been infested by. Is there a new breed of GM that says, I didn't draft these other guys. I don't care. I want to win. I'm going to trade picks if I have to. I'm going to do business differently. Do you get that sense? Because I kind of.
Yeah, I do. You know, and I think more so maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I think the guys that are doing this now are a little more experienced. You know, I'm watching Ryan Poles in Chicago, and I think he's made a couple of mistakes with some free agent signings, not this year. But I think he's learning on the job, you know, and I think that's what happens with some of these guys. Just learn on the job. And, you know, some of these guys really aren't football guys. They took sports management classes and, You know, some of them have, you know, finance, law degrees, things of that nature. They just happen to love football. So maybe he played, maybe not. So, you know, you're seeing some guys in executive positions, in high up positions in the NFL that are very analytic. They use the numbers. They love the analytics. And those things rue the day rather than watching the tape. And I think it's got to be a combination of those things. And some, you know, have done well. Some have failed, and some are the jury's still out on.
Okay, walk me through the top five picks. What do you think happens? Give me, looking into our lad's draft guide, crystal ball, what happens starting with Chicago? Work your way through the Charger pick at five. Are there trades in that top five selections? Go ahead, John. The floor is yours.
Okay, well, just, you know, I've done two or three mock drafts, and we're not big fans of mock drafts because they're so unpredictable. But, you know, our, you know, top guy, we think the Bears, if it was us, it would not be Caleb Williams. But we think the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams. You know, there's a lot of smoke that Washington is not going to take Jaden Daniels anymore when it looked like it was a lock they were going to take him. But, you know, we still think that's the best player for them. Supposedly at the interview, Jaden Daniels' agent was not happy. And, you know, there may be some trepidation there on that pick. If it's not Jaden Daniels, I think it would be Drake May. Then after that, I think the Patriots take whoever's left, Drake May or Jaden Daniels. Then it gets interesting, you know, in that top three. You know, if the Cardinals don't trade, I think they'll take Marvin Harrison Jr. They can't get what they want. But I could see Minnesota to make sure they get the quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. If indeed that's who they want, I could see Minnesota trading more likely into that spot. The Chargers, I'm thinking one of those two offensive tackles they might be interested in, but Brock Bowers wouldn't surprise me. And one of those receivers like Malik Nabers wouldn't surprise me either.
In terms of when you start with number six, you got the Giants who may have buyer's remorse because of the injuries and the contract they gave to Daniel Jones. And then, you know, when you go to seven and eight, et cetera, is there anything unique that we should be looking for pick six through 10?
I think the Giants would probably take one of those three receivers, quite frankly, to help, you know, their quarterback. You know, we've got a guy that works with us at our lads who also was on the New York Giants podcast, and he follows the Giants very, very closely. And in his opinion, with the quarterback situation, if J.J. McCarthy was sitting there, that's who he'd take. So, you know, that's just his feeling. You know, I think the receiver position, I think the Giants, you know, will most likely address.
This is going to be a fascinating Thursday. John, spectacular job jumping in here to co-host with us. Our Lads Draft Guide has been part of our sports library for decades upon decades. And I continue to tell all of the people on the podcast, just go to their website. You can place the order now. Year-round publications, the newsletters you used to put out, the rankings. It's just a unique piece of NFL journalism. John, absolute pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Great insight. John Cooper, Our Lads Draft Guide. Hope you enjoyed that newsmaker call going up and down the draft board. Who's hot? Who's not? Who's gone up? Who's gone down? John Riley, reaction.
I mean, there's so much. I mean, that he broke down. I mean, for you, what was the most surprising insight that he had that maybe opened your eyes a little?
That's a good question. He doesn't have any reservations on J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. I do. Obviously, they're at games. They scout Big Ten. They look at tons of video. McCarthy, to me, there's some questions. And I don't know what's fact or fiction during the Liars Club month of people and what they're saying about Drake May, because some people I've spoken to have spoken very highly of the North Carolina quarterback. Others say, no, he's not what he was propped up to be. Just look at what happened this past season. There's no doubt, though, that this is a fabulous draft. This is an unbelievable offensive draft. And I'll tell you, the rumors that are out there that of the first 15 picks, there could be 8 trades.
Wow.
Because the draft is so deep. So people say, if I could get a bonanza payoff, I'll drop down, go get somebody else. So just fascinating guy. I've dealt with the Our Lads draft guys for 30 years as a sports talk show host on radio and now on our platform. Just unique guys, because that's all they do.
Well, that's how you connected with Philly Billy.
Way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
Bill Werndell was doing some freelance stuff for Our Lads, and that's how I got hooked up with him. And then, blame me, it's my fault that Philly Billy wound up on the West Coast. My fault a lot of things happened, but that's how Bill Werndell, through our initial connection at Our Lads, wound up out here. Speaking of the NFL, there has been a trade this afternoon.
Oh, wow.
This is weird. The New York Jets, who have Aaron Rodgers, trying to rid themselves of Zach Wilson after 3 substandard seasons. He was a really high number one pick. They just traded him to Denver, and all they got was a 6th-round pick. Denver is going to take on the $5.5 million left on the 1 year on his contract. So Sean Payton, who needs a quarterback, he's got a project here. You know, I look at Zach Wilson, and I see a guy that's got great physical tools. But I look at Zach Wilson and his decision-making and where he's throwing the ball and how late he's getting it there and his accuracy. Something missing up here. But Sean Payton needs a quarterback, so he's going to take on that challenge for at least a year. Now, I wonder if that changes everything else Sean Payton does, because he was rumored trying to trade from number 12 to get up and get one of the marquee guys. Does Sean Payton just sit there and take Michael Penix instead? So he'd have Penix and Zach Wilson.
Wow. Kind of dual quarterbacks like Pittsburgh's doing, you know?
Yeah.
So, but when Zach Wilson was drafted, wasn't he like number 2 or 3 overall?
Yeah, to BYU.
Yeah. I remember I saw, this guy's good, but I didn't think he was that good.
Well, I thought he was good and he was a physical stud. And I thought, oh, you put a guy in a system and with coaching, you'll streamline him and probably make him better. He just never got better. And I watched him closely this past season. And his decision-making and his lateness to get balls where they're supposed to go or throwing into coverages. You say, why are you throwing the ball there? There's all these opponent's uniforms around your receiver. He just never clicked.
Yeah, you could see like his mind was racing in those 3 or 5 seconds of the play. But he always looked small to me when I saw him on television. You know, granted, he is not as big as an offensive line, but he was no Ben Roethlisberger. He wasn't that big.
So it'll be fascinating, but Zach Wilson has just been traded to the Denver Broncos. We'll see if that changes anything that's going to happen. Can you imagine the Raiders? If Denver takes Penix right in front of the Raiders pick at 13, because Raiders coach has just talked extensively about trying to trade up or maybe staying there and taking Penix and developing him. So going to be fascinating to see where it goes. Hey, our podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you in San Diego, and by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. When you need help with your eyes, think North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. It is time for John's favorite segment.
Yes, it is.
With John's best friends. Here comes Fans Forum. God, there are people lined up from here to the street.
Yeah, it's a big list here. All right, let's go to Richard. He says, Fans Forum, only the Dodgers are above 500 in the NL West. That's just weak, or is that just a slow start? Lee's eyes makes him look tough.
Yeah, linebacker eyes. By the way, I did not get punched. This is from retina surgery. But if I did get punched, Raider fan would still be in the hospital. Dodgers, it's all about how many pitchers are on the disabled list versus on the active roster. And that's been a big issue. Bullpen's a little shaky right now. They got 2 relievers. I think they're going to be okay. Small sample size, a lot of baseball to be played. But is Walker Buehler ready? And that's the big question. He's going to try to make one more rehab start Wednesday because he's not pitch dominant at AA or AAA. So keep an eye on that storyline as we go to Wednesday, and we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it on our Thursday show.
Yeah, I think that the NL West doesn't have any trouble. It's still early. Hey, let's move on here. We got tons of other people involved. And we'll go here to Joey. And he says, I don't think the Raiders can get up to the 2 or 3 position to get Jaden Daniels. I think the Raiders trade down a little bit, pick up an extra pick, and Michael Penix.
Except if Penix suddenly gets drafted by Denver, 1 spot in front of the Raiders. Now, it was interesting because John Cooper just said he liked the Raider quarterbacking. He thinks they develop Aiden O'Connell from Purdue. And obviously they're renting Gardner Minshew. He's got a little bit of a gunslinger. persona. Now, the Raiders need running backs. Raiders need a lot of things. So I never thought the Raiders have had the resources to trade that high up to get Jaden Daniels. And by the way, it's not Antonio Pierce's decision. Mm. Tom Telesco, the general manager, came totally out of character at their draft press conference the end of last week. I make the draft choice.
Wow.
So, period. Exclamation point. No further discussion. Next question.
Okay, moving on. Well, Joey had a quick one here to add in. Hey, let me know if you need me to take care of somebody for popping you in the eye. I got you, Saul. Hope you have a speedy recovery.
Well, we're working hard at it. John's laughing. I was on TV on KUSI on Saturday, and I walked in the newsroom with sunglasses. I thought, because this really looks bad. And they knew I was having a surgical procedure. And I said, what do you think? And the girls in the newsroom said, nah, just go on the set looking like that. And I said, yeah, you're always about the flair and the look, et cetera. So I wore my glasses, and then at the end I took them off, and I said, this is why I look weird. I didn't do anything wrong, but if I had, the Raider fan would still be in the hospital. They all had a laugh about that.
Well, here's another one. Hacksaw, you should see the other guy.
That's right. That's what I said. He's in the hospital in ICU. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to a real sports question. Hey, this is from Yin, and she says, Kawhi invented load management.
You know, the most unique aspect is the last couple of years, the Clippers use load management to handle his minutes to get him to postseason. This year, he played a lot of back-to-backs. This year, he played a lot of minutes. And it was not until we got to the finish line, all of a sudden, he's got this knee inflammation that they don't know where it came from, and they can't get it to go away. I mean, they're trying meds. They did an exam, an MRI, a scan. He does not have torn meniscus, which is what triggered the last incident a year ago. They just can't control it. You know, you can only have so many procedures, and after a while, the knee gives out, and maybe there's a piece of reality, John, we should be dealing with, that he's at the end of the road as a great, great player in the league only because of the physical wear and tear factor. But they didn't use load management with him this year, and he still got here, and he still got problems.
This is the same knee, right?
Same, two surgeries.
Yeah. You're right. You only have so many tendons, you know, to fix down there. But it would be awful if his career ended. I mean, the guy is such a great talent, yep. Such an inspiration. I was so happy when he went to the Clippers. But, you know, we'll see how this goes. I mean, maybe could he come back for the second series if they advance?
He could. But again, if you're pounding, how many minutes is he going to play? What's he going to feel like the next day? That's the big issue.
Mm.
Next
okay.
question.
Moving on. Okay, let's go here to Iron. Says Merrill should lead off for the Padres.
I'd think about it, though Profar has much, much more experience. And I just think they need to change something at the top. Yeah, do they have the flashy big innings where they hit home runs and all of a sudden they come from behind? Yes. But they've not been able to put anything together from a consistency standpoint of getting guys on base every inning and getting them around. And you've got a leadoff guy that gets on base who can steal bases, and either Merrill or Profar can do that. Maybe you need to flip this lineup a little bit.
We should get Ricky Henderson in his prime to come play for the Padres. He's my favorite baseball player of all time.
Ricky himself. That's what he called himself.
Exactly. But, you know, Merrill's not a bad choice to put up there. He's still hitting over 300. He makes contact. He doesn't strike out much.
And he runs the bases.
Yeah.
We move on.
Okay, here. I guess this is in response to the Trevor Bauer story from T. Will. He says, I struck out almost the entire roster of my son's Little League team. Where's my contract?
Yeah, but you were 32 doing it against 10-year-olds. That's not fair. Hey, the Mexican League is a much lower level. It's probably equatable to AA baseball. But the fact he's throwing BBs and the fact he's got great location, he is striking out guys. But there's also the fact of who he is and what he's gotten himself involved with and the lawsuits and everything. And what kind of reaction would there be in your community if your team signed Trevor Bauer? His team, no problem. He'd sign him yesterday.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, he's innocent. You know, he's been dug by the gold digger. So let's move on here. Go to Cal, and it says, hey, get well soon, Hacksaw. Do you believe Rod Blake would be on the hot seat if the Kings fall in their postseason kryptonite, the Oilers again in round one?
Well, kryptonite and the Oilers, that's one and the same. They got goal scorers. We find out, are they a different team? I'm still concerned about the back end. I'm still concerned about the goaltending. I just don't know that they have red-hot goaltending that can get you through a siege when you're under siege in somebody else's rink. That's a big issue. I don't think Blake's in jeopardy. He and Luke Robitaille, I think, are like this. They've jointly signed off on all these big money acquisitions. My critique is they've spent an awful lot of money on some guys that aren't $8 million players, but that's how Blakey and Lucky decided to mold this roster. I think it's going to be a great series. The one difference in Edmonton is that they still have the snipers, but the big difference is Skinner, their goaltender, is a lot better now as an experienced guy than last year when he looked like he was just overwhelmed with the aura of what the playoffs are.
What do you think of the TV broadcast for the NHL playoffs? I mean, I saw one of the games and the color analyst was a woman, and she was very good.
They brought some in from Canada who've done a really good job. Studio shows to me are too much yappy yappy. I don't know if I like. I mean, I'm a Gretzky fan. I'm a Messier fan as players, but I don't know that they add a lot of dynamics. I'm spoiled. I grew up watching Hockey Night in Canada when I lived on the East Coast, and I got access to Hockey Night in Canada. I wish the fans in the States could see Hockey Night in Canada, because that is an institution. But these broadcasts haven't been bad, and the game is the game, and that's what's the most important thing.
Right on. I mean, there's no way to get Hockey Night in Canada right
I don't
now?
Believe so, no.
Wow. Okay, let's move on. Another hockey comment from Steve. He says, that Jets-Avs was a killer game. What a fun game one. Who takes it, you think, Saw? Kings got a shot versus Oilers versus McDavid?
Well, the Kings have a real challenge because McDavid, Draisaitl, and Zach Hyman scored 54 goals this year, and they have better goaltending. So I think this is going to be a tough run uphill for the Kings. But if they sneak one out in Edmonton, everything can change. The Jets and the Avs, I think Winnipeg has had a really good season. I think the construction of that roster is really unique because they've made a lot of trades, and the acquisitions they've gotten by virtue of these different deals, getting Clifford, getting Vilardi, getting Toffoli, has really helped them a great deal. I was stunned, though, that they beat the Avs because the Avs are damn good. But Colorado has still got a lot of firepower. They got a lot of experience. Nathan MacKinnon makes everybody else on that roster more dangerous. We'll see what happens in goal in Colorado, because that goaltender gave up 7 goals and he was really shaky in the third period fighting the puck. That might be a toss-em series. But the Jets, if Jets win the second one, then they're in the driver's seat. If they lose, then the Winnipeg has to figure out a way to go into Denver and beat the Avalanche on that ice, and that's not easy.
Wow, man, Winnipeg fans are fired up, Lee.
Yeah, and you're buying Labatt's.
Labatt's, okay.
For game two.
Okay. I went with Moosehead was another one. That was another beer from Canada. And John says, hey, how is NHL expansion going to go? Who gets it in with Arizona, Houston, Quebec? Can Kroenke get a building in San Diego and talk Betterman into America's finest city?
Well, that's what I would wish and hope, that we might be able to get an expansion franchise. But then, you know, Kroenke is building the new sports arena. But who's going to pay the expansion fee, which I'm told is going to be $2 billion? So that's a big question. Houston probably is a second market. I'm not sure that Atlanta should get a third kick at the can. I like Quebec City. I don't know if the ownership is up there. The 18,000-seat Olympic arena is there. I think it'd be a phenomenal regional market, even though there's a disparity between the American and Canadian dollar. But that's not 2024, pal. That's probably 2028. That's way down the road.
Way down the road. Always good to have expansion. He had another quick comment here. Death taxes and the Leafs sucking in the playoffs.
So far they are. Holy cow. You talk about the big bad Bruins. They just checked them into the ice. They eradicated Austin Matthews. He hardly had any shots on goal. And Boston just grinds on you. They're so big and so physical. So I'll tell you what happens. If Toronto does not get out of this first round, if they get taken out by the Bruins, God, if they went out in 4 straight, Brendan Shanahan would probably lose his job as president of the team, and he was going to be the architect to bring this all together. Their payroll's phenomenal, and they've got all these big goal scorers. If they don't get there, he loses his job, and I would assume coach Sheldon Keefe would probably lose his job too. So it's right there in front of them. Toronto, it's on paper. They got this great roster. Haven't done it since 1967. Go figure that out.
1967? Really?
Last time they won the Cup.
Yeah, they were always the classic team. Remember that game we played as kids with those poles that we would twist?
Yes.
Yeah, and had the dome, and we'd play hockey. It was always the Canadians and the Maple Leafs.
I beat my sister 9-1, and she cried, and I got yelled at.
Okay, let's go here to 4RXLA. It says, do you think Mike Socha will manage again? He's been seen at Dodger Stadium lately. He'd be a good replacement for Roberts, especially if the Dodgers are still playing 500 ball in June.
Everybody wants Dave Roberts gone. That's a little bit that's off the charts. Mike Socha said over the weekend in Anaheim, because he does go to Angel games, he goes to Dodger games, he does not want to manage anymore. And again, he's been out of it for an extended period of time. I was surprised once he got removed, he never got back in. Or maybe he did not want to get back in. I was surprised Joe Maddon, after he got removed, he didn't get interviews to go back in either. But he's cut from a different cloth in terms of personality and relationships with the front office. So maybe Socha's time has come and gone because it's a very, very different game. And maybe people just didn't want to deal with Maddon's opinions. And Joe Maddon's opinions were strong. They were strong in Chicago. They were strong in Tampa. And they were surely strong in Anaheim.
Well, Anaheim needs some strong opinions, yeah, you know, to right that ship. But, you know the Socha going to the Dodgers is interesting to me because he won a World Series ring with the Angels. And he was very highly thought of as a manager in the league. And then, yeah, he just sort of retired, or did he get fired?
Well, he was removed.
He was removed.
Yeah, like, but at the end of the day, the game has radically changed.
Radically.
And he is really old school. And there's nothing wrong with being old school because he's got a track record to back it up. But people think that, quote, the game passed you by.
Well, he was the starting catcher for the Dodgers, like most of the 80s and into the 90s, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's like three or four decades ago.
Proven commodity.
Okay, let's move on. Let's go here to Manny. He says, have you heard any chatter of MLB umpires getting heat for some of their misused calls? Also, today an umpire ejected Aaron Boone because a fan chirped at the home plate umpire.
Boone was barking at Hunter Wendelstedt, first batter of the game against the A's. Wendelstedt had had enough. Wendelstedt took his mask off, walked towards Boone, and said, that's it. Next time you say something, he'll be gone. Put his mask on, walked back towards home plate. Suddenly, and I saw it, Wendelstedt wheels. He heard something, points to the dugout to Boone. You're gone. Boone was sitting on the steps of the dugout talking to his coach. It came from a fan right behind the Yankee dugout, and Wendelstedt wheeled. Boom. And none of the other umpires who came in to stop this confrontation interceded. None of them sided with Boone. Here's Boone going crazy. He said, that fan right there, box seat 4, the one with the red cap, he's the one that said something about you. It wasn't me. And they had the video. They showed the video of Aaron Boone talking to his coach about something with the pitchers, and all of a sudden he's out of the game. The umpiring, home plate, balls and strikes have been god-awful. Thank you, Angel Hernandez. And Wendelstedt might be coming up the chart getting equal to that. How do you do that to a guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's nuts. I mean, that's ego, you know, that's fragile ego going on there with the umpire. But yeah, give me the robo-ump for the calls of the balls and strikes, because some of these guys are just insane.
Well, baseball's, they got a problem there. You can't fire all the umpires. And that's an awful radical change if we're going to computerize balls and strikes. I don't know if that works. It's being done in the minor leagues, some successfully in the lower minor leagues where they don't throw a hell of a lot of strikes, and some in the upper AA and AAA.
Okay, moving on here. Let's go to Steve. He says, assuming the Chargers pick a wide receiver first, who's the better fit, the Ohio State guy or the LSU guy?
Well, you can't teach 4.23, and that's what Neighbors ran, the kid from LSU. But you can't teach style, size, discipline to run the routes. And Marvin Harrison, Ohio State, is the son of the great Colt wide receiver. This is in his DNA. If you're asking me, I'd take Marvin Harrison. But if you're asking me as king, if you're going to run the ball and you want to better protect that quarterback, you should take one of those offensive tackles. And I happen to, everybody that I've canvassed has talked extensively about Joe Alt being the best by a far margin over the Penn State guy, over the Oregon State guy, because he's so big and he's got great arm length. And you can teach him to be a better run blocker or be a better pass blocker. That's mechanics. That's coaching. And that's why you draft these guys and then you develop these guys. So you could trade down, but these guys are gems. These guys are can't-miss prospects, so I don't think I'd screw with that.
Can't-miss prospect, like Ryan Leaf, like you know, the quarterback from LSU that went to the Raiders.
Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, that guy, I mean, there's no can't-miss prospect, no such thing. If I'm the Chargers, I like the whole Ortiz bit about trading back and building assets. That's what I'd like to see. But here's just a crazy tangent comment.
Oh, from you in left field.
From
yes,
me
I
in
understand
left field.
That.
Okay, this
Go
is
ahead.
So, you know, you say these big offensive linemen, they're tall, they got long arms. Have you heard the talk about North Carolina State center DJ Burns from the NCAA tournament?
The basketball player.
The basketball player. Maybe he could go to the NFL. What do you think of that idea?
Well, that's why they have the sixth and seventh rounds. You do do stuff like that in addition to finding an odd great quarterback. But yeah, he's indicated, nah, I don't have any interest in playing football right now.
Really? He'd be pretty good. Okay, let's move on here. Let's go to Ted. He goes, don't understand questions about JJ. Midway through the year, he was the best quarterback, in my opinion. Then Michigan went total conservative, and that messed with JJ's confidence. He's the guy.
Well, that's up to these player personnel guys and why they've all met with him and why they went to Michigan's pro day, why they met with him personally. And they look at gobs and gobs, 2 years worth of video. So we're going to find out. That being said, and it's not that I'm not an advocate for J.J. McCarthy because the kid won, but let's be realistic here. He played on a great team. Massive offensive linemen who are going to be drafted. Running backs, wide receivers are going to be drafted. Defense. He played on a great team. Did he win some games? Yeah. Did he manage games? Hell of a lot more than he won. He managed games and made plays. So that's an intangible thing. That's why these player personnel guys do this all year round. They've looked at every snap, every game he played, the good games, the bad games, what defenses did to him. So we'll find out. Is he the fourth guy? Is he the sixth guy? Because that's some of the stuff that's out there. And somebody at the top of the draft is going to do something different. They'll trade out somewhere, and that may change the composition of what those picks are going to be right behind the team that makes the trade. It's a fascinating time. I love watching the draft.
It's going to be fun. And it's in Detroit this year, right?
Yes.
I saw the advertisements with Goodell and Eminem.
Yeah.
You know, and they're talking about the Detroit and all that. That's great. But wasn't J.J. McCarthy, like, you know, early part of the college football season, was like a second or a third round pick, right? He's really shot up the rankings.
Unbeaten. You know, somebody asked Joe Ortiz at the press conference last week, his Friday press briefing going into the draft. Michigan guys, would you take Michigan men? His response was national champions. Why would I not take guys off that team? Hmm. And he wasn't just making reference to J.J. McCarthy. He's making reference to B.J. Corum, the small, undersized, tough guy running back. He's making reference to Chris Jenkins. He's making reference to the cornerback. I happen to think the Chargers might draft Chris Jenkins in the second round. I think they might spend a third or a fourth round pick on the cornerback. I think his name is Mike Sinistrill. He's a player. He's a gamer, a little bit undersized, but makes things happen. So, like Ortiz says, why would I not take somebody from Michigan? They're national champions.
Well, it's like the Eagles took all those players from Georgia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and they're national champions, so why not? Okay, here's another comment. I'm kind of interested in your thoughts here. This is also from Cal. He says, hate to be the guy who adds some gas onto the fire, but congrats to Ted Leitner on his tenure with San Diego State football and men's basketball. Wishing him well in retirement after next basketball season.
Well, he's had a long career. He's had a very good career the way he wanted to do it. And I guess that's cool. I got to do it the way I wanted to do it, too. And it was pretty good, too. You think about the experiences, not so much in football, because the Aztecs haven't accomplished a hell of a lot in football. Won some games, have had Heisman Trophy candidates at running back. But think about the accomplishment of March Madness and going to the Sweet 16 and going to the Final Four. And by the way, you're broadcasting the championship game. So cool. If you're a broadcaster in the driver's seat, that is such an experience because it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing with this program to go to that level. So he did really well for a long period of time. He's had health issues like I've had health issues. That junk seems to catch up to you. So it'll be interesting to see what life without play-by-play is like, because as I learned, it takes adjustment. It's really different.
Well, I will say this, that John Schaefer taking over for Ted, I think the world of him. I think he's really good. And I think it's a bright future. They're grooming him for basketball, too. So, you know, kudos to Ted. He's been a San Diego sports guy for decades. But yeah, you know, it's just a change of the guard.
I was fascinated after he got removed at Channel 8. He just did Padres. I was surprised he never surfaced again to do TV because he was different and he was well-watched. But he was making mega money when they paid mega money to TV people. They're not doing that anymore. So maybe that's the reason he didn't want to do it. So hope his life in retirement is rewarding. But when you got health issues, it changes the concept of a lot of things. And he had the cancer scare with a kidney, which is really serious stuff. And he has had eye problems too, and they've not been able to solve his.
Wow. Yeah, it's fun following the sports media in town. Hey, you want to do social media? We're kind of going
long.
Let's
do a couple quick hits here before we're asked to leave the building.
Okay. All right, let's go here to the pitching pandemic comment. This is from Barry, and this is from a YouTube comment. He goes, I was talking about this with my physical therapist who played D1 baseball and now helps athletes recover from shoulder and elbow injuries. In addition to pitchers chasing velo and spin rates, he believes the problem begins at the youth level. All modern major leaguers grew up playing travel ball, playing 3 to 4 times the games as their predecessors. Those who had pitching talent are overused by ambitious coaches, hence the relatively recent push to monitor youth pitch counts.
Concur. I'll check off every one of those boxes because the great young pitcher is now trying to develop velocity. In some cases, they are throwing some of that wicked stuff that puts wear and tear on arms. A lot of coaches don't let you do that. What you do between starts at that level is really hugely important. The surgeons who do these now repairs, the Tommy John procedures, about 3 or 4 of these guys now that specialize in it, they're seeing a lot more college pitchers and they're seeing high school kids have to have this done. And it's terrible. I mean, parents. Parents, I'm not going to say are to blame, but parents are to blame.
Yeah.
And I speak from experience because my son was an All-American wrestler in college and high school and did very well. And you want to see your kid do well. You want to excel. I'm not living through my kid. I have my own career and my own life and my own popularity. But parents want their kids to do well. And if that means developing velocity and throwing breaking pitches at a young age, sometimes they don't pay attention to what the long-term effect could well be, but it's a crisis. And Clayton Kershaw said, we're all out here to win, and we're all out here to be the best we can. And if me throwing 99 or me being able to get break on my stuff, you do it because you want to be successful, and then there's a big contract at the end of the rainbow for you. But now the fatality rate is just phenomenal. I mean, I chart this stuff with my Hacksaw Headlines. We're averaging, I'd say, 5 major elbow injuries, shoulder injuries a week.
A week
in baseball. You know, 2 weeks ago we talked about, I think I counted there were 21 elbow surgeries since spring training. I think there have been at least 10 more in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
And that's at major league level, and that's top guys in the minor league levels. You know, everybody, I'll give you an example. Everybody in Pittsburgh is excited about the number one pick. This pitcher, Paul Skeens from LSU, throws 104, just striking out everybody in AAA in Indianapolis right now. But I look at him, and I think that's great. He's going to get up here, and there'll be it's a different level, and you have to develop and do more. How long does he hold up before something happens? Because it's happening to virtually one out of every 2 great pitchers in baseball has got some type of problem.
Reminds me of Steven Strasburg.
Exactly.
You know, when he was in college, just blowing everyone away.
And he got hurt very early in his Washington Nationals career. They did the elbow surgery. They fixed it. He came back. He continued to dominate. I mean, you talk about lightning electric stuff. And what happened? Shoulder. What happened? Neck. Blood clot. What happened? Nerve damage. Never recovered. Mm. That's a shame. He got his contract. He got his money. Could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher. I mean, he had 162 wins and a lot of years in front of him. But because of what he was throwing, he broke down.
Interesting. You know, so my son pitched in high school and in D1. And it's all about velo. That's all that they want. The whole incentive structure throughout the whole from Little League on up is who can throw the hardest. Right. So that's part of the problem. But I will go here, you know, to what Barry was saying with some coaches will overuse players. I was fortunate because my son had a good coach that taught him the right mechanics and his managers did follow pitch count limits. But I remember there was one kid here in our Poway community who was just the killer pitcher in Little League. And then they played travel ball, 13, 14 year old, and he blew out his arm because the coach pitched him too much.
Yeah, it takes a definition. These are the rules. This is what you do. This is what you don't do between starts. It takes discipline to make it happen. A couple more social media posts here before we wrap up Fans Forum.
Okay, let's go here. A little OJ comment from Philip. He goes, Lee, do you have a copy of your interviews with OJ? It would be fascinating to watch as a retrospective.
Nah, I don't have any of those. That goes back a long, long time ago in sports talk radio. But we've gotten a lot of response to my One Man's Opinion column and what I did on Instagram about OJ Simpson. And we've gotten feedback from other people who've read other things about black jurors making insinuations. This is a payback for what white America has done, which in essence meant this guy was guilty and you let him off because he was a star or he was an African-American. And I guess the most appalling thing to me, and I look back and I understand you're dealing with some cases, dirty cops, mishandling of DNA. The fact that Nicole Brown Simpson called the Brentwood and LA police 63 times about domestic incidents in that house while she was married to that guy, and that guy was never charged, and then she wound up being dead. I mean, it's just a horrific, horrific story for those families. And trial of the century, yeah, probably the greatest injustice trial of a century, too, in terms of the outcome. At least that's one man's opinion, and I'm entitled to my opinion.
Yes, you are. But, you know, it's interesting. I've been to your house, and your garage is full of stuff that you've collected from your career. And even in your living room where you hang out and watch television and watch all the sports, I'm surprised that you don't have, like, archives. But maybe that wasn't a thing back in the 80s and 90s.
Well, you kept tapes, but the problem was the tapes deteriorate.
Yeah.
And I was not technically oriented to be able to transcribe stuff and put them on CDs. And I was too busy working, doing talk shows to impress you so we could do this podcast. But that stuff's been there, gone, but, you know, the memories live on.
They live on. Okay, you got an angel comment here, and this is from Richard, and he says, one man is responsible for this train wreck since losing the 2009 ALCS to the Yankees. Worst farm system in MLB since 2010. No top shelf level American high school player since number 27, Mike Trout. No top shelf Latin star since K-Rod. Won't sign top shelf level pitching talent. I knew Blake Snell wasn't coming, LOL. They rushed their top prospects since Joe Adell, followed by Matt Tyson, Zach Neto, and now Nolan Schnall. By the way, these last four guys were all 22 years old college players because their player development is in the toilet, and it is useless for coaching up younger American high school kids or Latin players.
Making reference, obviously, to the whole operation of under the umbrella of Artie Moreno.
Artie Moreno.
The Angels owner. Bill Stoneman was a really good general manager. They put Bill Bavese Jr. in as GM, and I think he was manager there with, who was there? Collins? Was a manager. And I thought that was a pretty good consortium. And then it kind of fell apart. And I don't know whether it was on Terry Collins or whether it was on Bavese or whether it was on ownership. I think that might have been the tail end of the Disney era. I had great hopes that when Artie came in, he was going to do a lot of things. And he did a lot of things early on. And then they kept making mistakes. And then they kept making bad investments. And they didn't draft well, etc. So it cascades. If you can't fix it and you don't hire the right people to fix it, and Artie doesn't know player personnel, all he's doing is writing the checks. But if he says, I want to sign Josh Hamilton or I want to sign Justin Upton, your general manager probably has to do it. So they've got guys in the farm system. It's a long way back because now the injury factor in baseball impacts your roster more on an annual basis than anybody realizes. Mm. And you can have all these players. I mean, Baltimore, Orioles, lost and lost and lost. And Michael Elias came in as general manager from Houston, and he kept drafting high. They've hit on every one of their draft picks. You look at the roster, they're all from the Oriole farm system. But that being said, they lost one pitcher already, John Means, who's not come back. He was the ace of their staff. Second guy, Kyle Burdish, is hurt coming off his own elbow problems, shoulder problems. He's not back yet. He's in the middle of rehab. So you can have all these blue chippers, but the fatality rate of pitching in baseball is bad. And if you lose one or two of your top guys, it's impossible to replace them. So it's just a lot of complex things that go into making a roster work. And obviously, the Angels have made a lot of mistakes, too.
Well, you know, even this Jackson Holliday kid, everyone said, was a can't-miss prospect. Mm-hmm. And he's been striking out a mile a minute, right?
Oh, he's under a lot of pressure. He's putting a lot of pressure on himself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not ready, but that's okay. They sent Mickey Mantle back to the Kansas City. I think it was Kansas City Royals or the American Association.
Really?
Like two or three times.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you ought to get out of the house more. Go to the library. Mickey Mantle was a shortstop. Could not field a ground ball. He made like 42 errors in minor league baseball. Yet they brought him up, made him an outfielder. He was great. Didn't hit worth a lick. He was crying the day Casey Stengel told him, "You're going back. You got to go back to the American Association."
Really?
He was going to quit. His father came from Oklahoma and picked him up and said, "You're not quitting. You're going back to..." It might have been Kansas City or Joplin. It was either their top farm club or their second. He went down there, learned how to hit, made him an outfielder, and became a superstar.
Unbelievable.
So guys get sent back.
Yeah.
And Jackson Holliday will probably be going back to AAA.
He probably will.
To Norfolk, but that's okay. That's just part of the growth process. I mean, Jackson Merrill is unique. Is unique to stay here all year and hit 280 to 312? I don't know, but we'll find out. But that's what young guys are all about.
You know, going back to the Angels, you were just talking about the Disney ownership. I'm trying to remember the history because Gene Autry had it for a long time.
A long time.
Then Disney took over, and then did Moreno take over after Disney?
Yes. Yeah, so, Disney ran it, and they had some success. And then Disney lost interest in pro sports. Disney also owned the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Mm-hmm. When they went to the Stanley Cup Finals and just kind of lost interest. To me, the most disturbing thing was I've been to Angel games and I've been to what was then the pond to watch the hockey team. To see the owner's box, the big expansive box behind home plate or at center ice up on the roof of the pond, to see it dark all the time.
Really?
Disney just kind of lost interest. And they have a big mega company doing other things, movies and TV shows and the Disney Channel, etc. But that was sad because their intent was good coming in, had some success, and then just kind of frittered it away with all the changes and the CEOs and all that.
Amazing. I mean, it's such a perfect corporate schmoozing opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. To hang out in the skybox.
I'm waiting for some of your friends to invite us back to a Potter game. They got the corporate boxes. Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed this extended NFL Draft Preview Show, our Monday bonus podcast. Our thanks again to John Cooper from Our Last Draft Guide. Hope you stayed with us through the whole course. We'll be back here Thursday. Thursday afternoon, the draft starts in the 5 o'clock hour, so we'll be here Thursday afternoon at 1 with last minutes, rumors, innuendos, trades, etc. Our podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you in San Diego. You got projects, think about them, they can help you. And by North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido, we will all need help with our eyes somewhere down road when that time comes. Just remember, North County Eye Center. John? Take a deep breath. Get ready for NFL Draft Day on Thursday.
Yeah, kind of like a pregame show that we're going to have. It'll be good.
Good show here today. Hey, thanks for being with us. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll tell your friends too and subscribe and share on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.